This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices episode 14 was recorded on June 3rd, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. Alhambra Investment CIO Jeffrey Snyder is most famous among Macro Voices listeners for his Eurodollar University. And for anyone who has not already heard that series, if you really want a deep dive into the Eurodollar system, go to macrovoices.com/EDU. It's actually a 7-part series with Jeff where we go through the full history of the Eurodollar system. But Jeff, we did a separate interview a little more than a year ago in early 2018, and it was about yield curves. And specifically at that point, people were just starting to talk about, okay, is the yield curve going to invert? And we did a lot of discussion. I want to refer our listeners back to that. You'll be able to find a link on our homepage at macrovoices.com next to Jeff's picture. If you want to go back to that interview from 2018 for Jeff's full-length interview on yield curves, it's available via the website. Jeff, that interview from 2018, we were talking about people getting excited about the yield curve. Needless to say, the yield curve is suddenly on everyone's mind. You put together a great slide deck for today's interview. Listeners, you'll find the download link in the description of this interview on our homepage at macrovoices.com. Jeff, let's dive into that slide deck and tell us, what do you see in the yield curve today? Because in that interview, you said it's not just about inversions. There's a whole bunch more to look at.
Yeah, there is so much information contained in these curves, and I think people do themselves a great disservice by only paying attention when they invert, because you know what these yield curves represent are the major, the biggest players and the biggest, deepest markets around the world. All of the financial firms, all of the pension funds and insurance companies, all the biggest people investing all around the world in this global, in the global economy, in the global financial system, and what they see from, you know, what's going on in each of those things. And so, you know, paying attention to these curves more than just when they invert, you'll do yourselves a lot of favor. And that's what we were talking about early last year, was how, you know, the narrative had grown out from, you know, 2016, 2017, how the global economy was going to take off. Finally, we had synchronized growth in all of the major economies around the world, which central economists all told us that was meaningful growth. That was a signal to them that after all the crap of the last decade, that was all finally behind us. QE had finally worked in all the right places, and the global economy is going to take off. And in the U.S. specifically, you know, the unemployment rate had been below what economists had considered full employment for several years already, and it was only going lower. So therefore, not only were we going to have a global recovery, what they call globally synchronized growth, it was going to be an inflationary recovery. As an inflationary recovery, that was supposed to be really bad for the bond market. And he had all sorts of people telling us that, hey, the 30-year bond bull was over with. I mean, the interest rates have nowhere to go but up. And those things would have been true if, you know, central bankers had been correct about the trajectory of the global economy. And so the curves were telling us throughout 2016, throughout 2017, you know, there was disagreement with the mainstream story. The Fed was supposed to be more aggressive. The flattening curve, not just the fact that the curve was flattening in all throughout 2017, especially late 2017 when this narrative really took off, the curve was flattening at around 3% nominal, which was totally abnormal. And so when we look at the yield curve specifically, we have to keep in mind it's not just one curve. It's not a monolithic thing, which is what we, you and I, Eric, spent a lot of time talking about last year. It's not really two curves, but it's conceptually, it's easier for us to think about it as two curves. At the short end, you have things like treasury bills, which are more monetary alternatives. They're alternatives, things like the reverse repo that the Federal Reserve provides, or IOER. And so the Fed can influence the short end, and may, you know, people think that they control the short end, but they influence the short end much more than they do the long end. In fact, the long end of the yield curve tends to be more independent. And that is where all of these big financial firms around the world are taking information that they're getting from the real economy and translating them into long run expectations about a great number of things, but mostly about what they see today. The things that are going on today, how are they going to have consequences down the road? And so the long end of the curve throughout 2017 was resisting this inflationary breakout scenario. And so all the time that, you know, Jay Powell was becoming aggressive, Janet Yellen handing off to Jay Powell, economists talking about the end of the 30-year bond bull, the long end of the bond curve was saying, this is not happening.
Okay, Jeff, so I think that discussion kind of covers slide three. Moving on to slide four, what are we seeing here when it says flattening in the wrong place?
Okay, we're talking about yield curve. What we're really talking about is probability distributions. And so the flat curve of 2017, early 2018 said the probability that something was going to go wrong before we ever got into that inflationary recovery was exceedingly high. That's why the long end of the bond curve was flat where it was flat. It was saying that, look, nothing had changed. You know, this globally synchronized growth narrative was meaningless. It was a bunch of central bankers and economists emotionally imputing their own motives onto something that didn't exist. The long end of the bond curve was saying, hey, something was going to go wrong before we ever got that far. And lo and behold, where we are today, you know, a year and a half later, the curve is now heavily inverted into a shape that tells you, yeah, something big is going on right now.
And moving on to slide five, what happened May 29th of 2018?
Well, May 29th, first of all, May 29th was the very thing that the flat curves were talking about in 2017 and 2018. Again, thinking about yield curves as probability distributions, the probability that something was going to go wrong was high. And it was high all throughout that period. May 29th was the day something went wrong. Now, what exactly happened on May 29th, we don't know. We may never know. Specifically, in terms of markets, bond yields tumbles, especially in Germany. German bond yields tumble. So, you know, we can imagine, we can speculate about what exactly happened, but it almost doesn't matter. Something broke on that day. And what we find is that it was something substantial. It was an inflection that we see in every major chart. And I'm just showing you a couple of them here. You know, swap spreads and inflation expectations are a couple of pretty big ones. What we see uniformly is that May 29th was the thing the flat bond curve was worried about all along. Then it happened. And ever since May 29th, 2018, over a year now, everything is almost straight downhill ever since. Minor reflation, minor improvement beforehand, after May 29th, we're going back into all the wrong stuff. And that's true of not just the markets, you know, not talking about the bond markets, but also the economy. We see lots of economic data transition from growth to less certain growth and even contraction in some places later in the year. May 29th was the day that the thing that the bond curves were worried about, that's the day that it actually happened.
Jeff, moving on to slide six, we see the euro-dollar curve inverting. What does that actually mean, and what does it portend for the economy?
Any kind of curve inversion is a weight. I mean, everybody knows that. Talk about Treasury futures curve or Treasury curve or euro-dollar futures. Inversion is what people pay attention to. They may not have realized that in the immediate aftermath of May 29 last year, the euro-dollar futures curve actually inverted ever so slightly in some outer years. Now, what that meant, specifically, it was in the 2020 to 2021 contract range, which seems like it's way down the road. You know, was the market worried about some kind of big financial event or massive recession in 2020 and 2021, that's not really the way to think about it. What it was, again, probability distributions. The Eurodollar futures market was saying something happened on May 29th. We're not really sure what it was. It was a big thing. That's the most important message, that whatever broke on May 29th, it was a serious dislocation. In immediate aftermath of that, this slight inversion in outer years was market players, again, in these big, deep global bond markets around the world, these people started to hedge against something bad happening. And the way you do that is outer years. And the way the futures curve behaves is that inverts slightly, which suggests, if you take them literally, that interest rates in 2021 would be a little bit lower than they were in 2020. But all that was the market saying, hey, we're getting a bad feeling here. Something happened on May 29th, and if it's allowed to continue, that's probably going to lead to something even worse. And so that's what the slight inversion was in the immediate aftermath of May 29th, was the market getting the sense that, okay, something finally did happen, and it's the probability that it leads to the next big thing, and then the next big thing, the next big negative, is rising and rising and rising. And we should also point out that the day that the curve actually inverted was June 13th. which was the June Federal Open Market Committee meeting, where they made their first technical adjustment to IOER. And I don't want to get into federal funds and IOER too much here, but federal funds are supposed to be the thing that the Federal Reserve does most. I mean, that's supposed to be the thing that they know hands down, the thing that they can do blindfolded. And their adjustment to IOER in terms of a signal of to the bond market, to Eurodollar futures, was the fact that, hey, not that they're losing control of the federal funds market, but, you know, it was a visible sign they never really had control of the federal funds market. So you have a couple of things happening in close succession where the market started to get the perception that something had gone wrong, even to the point where it forced the Federal Reserve into doing something it didn't want to do, and that that might progress into something worse.
Jeff, if I play devil's advocate here, if I look at the way other macro traders use Eurodollar futures spreads, and there's certainly people that have not done nearly as much work with Eurodollars as you have, usually they just look at it as a proxy for how the market is discounting FOMC policy. In other words, if there is a certain spread in Eurodollar futures, what it's telling you is the market is discounting a certain number of basis points of hiking or cutting from the Fed during that period. And I think what a lot of people might say as they look at slides 6 and 7 here is, okay, you see Eurodollar is inverting because at that FOMC meeting, it changed investor perception and people started perceiving that there would be cuts instead of hikes in the future. Is there anything more to it than that? Are Eurodollar's futures telling us more than most macro traders are giving them credit for?
That's, if we take them literally, that's exactly what they're saying. What is Jay Powell going to do in the future? But where we marry the Eurodollar futures curve to the U.S. Treasury curve, the long end of the bond curve tells us what are the consequences and what are the implications of that. And so you have to ask yourself, especially in 2018, the Eurodollar futures market is saying increasingly that the Fed is not only going to give up on any future rate hikes, it's actually going to go into increasingly more and more greater probability of rate cuts. What does that actually mean other than specifically the Fed's going to cut rates? I mean, remember, throughout 2018, this was supposed to be an inflationary worldwide breakout. And here you have this Eurodollar futures market, very deep market, saying, no, the Fed is going to actually cut rates rather than hike as they would have if the inflationary breakout was a real thing. There is something beneath the surface that is going to make, eventually, going to make the Fed turn around 180 degrees and start reducing interest rates. And you have to ask yourself, what would make Jay Powell do that, especially from the context of late 2018? The guy was aggressive. He was saying the economy is really strong. The unemployment rate has inflation. For him to turn around 180 degrees and do so in this year, in 2019, that would have to be something substantial. So yes, we look at Eurodollar futures as an idea of what the Fed's going to do, but it's not necessarily what the Fed thinks it's going to do. And so the implications are beyond just monetary policy. The implications are for pretty much everything. You know, if the Fed has to cut rates for reasons it doesn't believe in today, that tells you something pretty substantial is probably going to change between now and the day the first rate hike happens.
Now, on slide 6, you're showing us the Eurodollar calendar spread from 2020 to 2021. So we're looking at the long-dated, what's going to happen well into the future. On slide 7, you come back to a closer spread, the 2019 to 2020, and we see a very different shape there. So what are these different calendar spreads telling us about different parts of the Eurodollar curve?
Well, as I said before, the 2020 to 2021 are those outer years. And so in the immediate aftermath of May 29th, the market got the perception that something could be wrong. And so they started hedging a little bit in the outer years. As you see that inversion start to move closer and closer to the front, that is more and more market conviction that this thing that we were a little worried about after May 29th, we're now becoming increasingly worried about it. There's something going wrong and it's going more and more wrong so that we become more and more confident that the Fed is going to cut rates and they're going to cut rates sooner and they're going to do more rate cuts. That's what the inversion is telling us closer into the front months today, is that the Fed is going to do sooner cuts and more of them. That's what the chart on slide 7 shows us, that as especially in November and December when global markets were a total mess, the Eurodollar futures market was picking that up as, okay, this thing that we worried about in the wake of May 29th, actually happening. We saw economic data become pretty bad in a lot of key economies. You saw interest rates tumble, the U.S. Treasury curve. You saw even the stock markets tumble, which suggested liquidation. So, you know, all of these things were feeding into a perception that, okay, after May 29th, we're into an entirely different paradigm, another deflationary wave, or what you and I, Eric, have called a euro-dollar squeeze. This thing is happening. Not only is it happening, it's substantial, and it's getting closer and closer and closer to today.
And we see on slide 8 that you're translating this into expectations around, you go from rate hikes are done to rate cuts are closer. So give us a little bit of an update on what we can expect here as we look at slide 8.
Yeah, what we're trying to figure out is, you know, how substantial is this thing? And so to do that, we kind of, as you pointed out, we want to translate this into everyday terms, which you've already done. You know, Eurodollar futures are tied to 3-month LIBOR. That's how you get paid. The day the Eurodollar futures contract expires, you get paid based on the rate of 3-month LIBOR on that date. So you're trying to gauge where will 3-month LIBOR be on the day that my contract expires. And a lot of different things go into that, including, as you pointed out, what is the Federal Reserve doing? Because as we pointed out also with the short end of the U.S. Treasury curve, the Federal Reserve provides monetary alternatives, including alternatives to LIBOR. So they have influence on LIBOR. So the Eurodollar futures market is taking all of this information and putting it together to decide where is 3-month LIBOR going to be in the future, in the near future, in the distant future, in the way off future. And so that's what these futures contract prices are. And I'm showing them here on slide 8. The Eurodollar futures prices are inverted so that we can match them up to where LIBOR is or where the market thinks LIBOR is going to be in the future. And what they're telling us is, increasingly, especially after November, not only were rate hikes gone, I mean, you look at the last rate hike that the Federal Reserve did in mid-December, the market expectations for LIBOR were already collapsing by the time Powell did his last rate hike. And what that was telling us that, hey, the market was way ahead of this Fed pause. Powell was already on strong, or still on strong economy, still doing rate hikes, when the market was saying, no, you're going to stop rate hikes completely, which he did a few weeks later. Now that the Eurodollar futures prices have continued to rise, which tells us that the market is expecting LIBOR to go lower and lower and lower in the future. Again, why would LIBOR do that? The only reason that it would do that is, especially substantially, what it's already done so far, and then go further in the future, the only reason it's going to do that is because the Fed is going to be reducing its own money alternatives, things like the reverse repo rate, things like IOER, federal funds, all of that stuff. So the market is telling us that LIBOR is going lower and lower and lower, not just in the distant future, but, you know, I included the September contract in here for a reason. But this year, the expectations are that there are going to be rate cuts, not rate hikes, rate cuts in the second half of this year. Now, if we take these futures prices literally, you look at the trough of where the inverted curve is in the spring of 2021, the curve is inverted about 80 basis points, which is a massive inversion. If we take it literally, that says that, you know, LIBOR is going to be about somewhere around 1.7% in the spring of 2021, which is about, you know, 80 basis points less than where it is today. But that's not, again, when we're talking about curves, we're not really talking about taking these things literal. These are probability distributions. And so an 80 basis point inversion is a probability distribution centered on 3 rate cuts between now and 2021. And so that distribution can be on the upper bound, the high end, the optimistic end, only going to get 1 to 2 rate cuts. We have a global soft patch where the Fed panics a little bit, does something like 1998, where Alan Greenspan reduced the federal funds rate 3 times, everything goes back to normal and everybody's happy. That's the most optimistic scenario for this market today. On the low end, as Eurodollar futures prices go up, and as that means the expectations for future LIBOR goes further and further downward, the market is pricing in an increasing chance of getting back to a zero interest rate policy. And not, you know, way off in the future, just over the horizon. That's the downside scenario that the market is thinking about right now today. A return to ZERP is not out of the question. In fact, it's becoming increasingly likely. You look at the way the curves have behaved just in the last couple of trading sessions. These futures prices have spiked, which means expectations for future interest rates have plummeted, which tells us that the downside that the market is seeing is something that would produce a return to the zero interest rate policy. Again, going back to the long end of the yield curve, what are the implications of what it would be that would force the Federal Reserve today or in the near future to start cutting interest rates that leads them back to a zero interest rate policy? That's not happy things.
Well, Jeff, we've run a little bit over time, but it's always worth it to get an update from you on Eurodollar futures. We look forward to having you back again soon for another update. Listeners, be sure to stay tuned for your Macro Voices feed. We've got lots of exciting new content coming up for you. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.